So, dear Danny, Trouble and Their Double Lives is your first live album to be released in over 20 years. The album has been recorded between 2014 and 2019, pre-COVID era. Do you feel that vibe in the album? And do you think nowadays the same vibe is coming back?
Yeah, I definitely do think the same vibe is back. We've done four tours since COVID. A bunch of summer festivals, naturally. Mm-hmm. Just came back from Las Vegas last week. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would say the vibe is stronger than ever now. I think people, those are the bands that have actually stayed around.
How was the production work with Scott Adkins at the Grindstone Studios? Are you overall satisfied with the final result? Does this represent correctly the band on stage?
I think so. Scott's a very close ally of the band. I'm actually seeing him today because we began work on Cradle's new album. Mm-hmm. As of Monday. Mm-hmm. Obviously, just the drums are going down. It's going to take a few months, obviously. But yeah, he's a close compatriot of the band, and therefore we trust him implicitly. And we worked closely with him once he obviously went through the multitude of tapes, well, digital shows that we provided him from our sound guy. We worked closely with him on the album. There was a lot of work to do, but not a huge amount. I mean, all the live ingredients were there. It was just getting into a good shape for people to enjoy.
And back then, and even nowadays, do you feel there is any difference between, like, audiences around the world, American audiences, European audiences, Northern European audiences, Southern European audiences?
There's small differences, but nothing major. I see the metal community pretty chaotic and supportive and flamboyant and... There's, yeah, lots of attributes that I'd attribute to fandom. So I wouldn't notice anything too... Obviously, there's going to be differences in the fact that if you play in Iceland compared to Australia, you know, people would be, I guess, more wrapped up in warm clothes and have a slightly different mindset. But generally, fans are pretty crazy the world over.
Okay. So, like, while vocally speaking, how do you prepare yourself before shows? And did you follow any... specific studies in your life for your vocal technique?
Well, I started following Melissa Cross, but I found some of her stuff worked and a lot of it really wasn't for me. I think there's a lot of generalization when it comes to anything when you're doing something from a personal kind of outlook. What works for one person doesn't necessarily work for another. Okay. I don't believe in there's a lot of people that before they go on stage, they warm up for about an hour. And I just think it's too much. It's like running a half marathon before running a marathon.
Yeah.
It's just literally pointless. It just tires you out. So my warm up's probably about 10 minutes at best. It doesn't, obviously we would have sound checked in the afternoon and we generally sound check for about an hour. So that really is a warm up. Obviously a warm up for the sound check as well. So yeah. By the time we get on stage, my voice is, as long as I don't have to be put in a position where I do tons of interviews. I used to do that. And nowadays I just say, not really. It's just too much for a singer to do, to be talking all day and then to be singing. Just the same as it would be if a drummer had a drum all day. So, there's a few things obviously that you have in preparation for going on stage. One thing is to keep calm, enjoy yourself, don't get stressed. Stress is a total mind killer. As soon as if anything gets stressful on tour, it gets totally stopped, whether it's people being dramatic, or which we don't get any of that fortunately anymore, or you're in a weird scenario where just bothersome people, just keep a clear head the whole day, enjoy yourself. That's what tours are for, to enjoy. As soon as they become unenjoyable, that's it. We just don't want to do it. I think we've been in this game long enough now that we have the opportunity now to say whether we want to do tours or not. Do we want to play the shitty club? No. Do we want to play a good venue? Yes. Do we want to enjoy ourselves? Yes. Do we want to be miserable the whole time? No. Obviously, it goes without saying. So, yeah, keeping a good mindset, explore the locality, chill out, relax, do everything that makes you feel good, in order that feeling then equates to a very good live performance later in the day. And obviously I have teas and, you know, I don't drink alcohol anymore, so that's a big plus. Alcohol is terrible for the voice, etc., etc. Little things that all add up to a bigger picture.
While in the studio, it is different. It's like an actor preparing for a movie or a theater performance.
Yeah, studio is a different matter altogether. It's a lot more laid back, and it's more of a controlled environment as well. So, yeah, you don't have to be so so finite about all the details in the studio. And another thing about the studio as well is to relax and enjoy yourself and enjoy the process of recording a record. As soon as you become stressed, your voice gets tensed up and you know, it becomes frustrating. You don't want to be going down that avenue. Everything should be totally enjoyable. There's been times in the past with old members and scenarios that just made it be very unpleasant being in a band. And I'm of the age now that it sounds very selfish, but anything in my periphery that starts annoying me, or I can't get on with this person, or this is getting bothersome, I just stop it and move on to something else. I've got no patience for drama or, you know, just stress in general.
Yeah, and technically speaking, how much do you like to work with vocals, vocal effects in the studios, and how much with the natural voice?
Well, I know that my producer hates vocal effects, so not very much.
Yeah.
Yeah, not really. Every now and then we put vocal effects on for a specific purpose, you know, whether it's a delay or some strange audio effect that enhances the track or is relevant to the track. But generally speaking, not a great deal. Just have a little reverb. Our producer really hates overly affected stuff. And also, we're in a band where it's very extreme. There's a lot going on.
Yeah.
So less is more. You know, if we're going to put orchestration on a song, you don't want 100 tracks. It's just the ear won't hear half of those anyway. So we try and keep everything very concise. And the same applies to the vocals as well.
Yeah, not too many layers.
No. Literally, we've got it down to maybe to sometimes if you're doing a chorus, that we'll do some choral tracks, so we'll put some extra vocals on the sides, like a sort of stereo pan to fill it up.
Yeah.
But generally, it's one or two vocals, yeah.
Well, next year will mark the 30th anniversary of your debut album. Will you do something special about it?
We've re-recorded two songs from that first album.
Mm-hmm.
We may go out. I mean, we've got the whole year next year is absolutely packed with shows.
Okay.
Because our new album will be out next year. This year's relatively quiet for us, although we've already toured America this year with Devil Driver, like a co-headline tour. We've got a handful of summer festivals. The back end of the year, we go to South America, Mexico, the second leg of the American tour. And that's pretty much it thus far this year. But next year's the big one. So I think we may find it very hard to fit in anything to do with Principle. I'm hoping we'll have the opportunity to play the album in its entirety on at least one or two occasions. But at the moment, there's no definite plans for that other than to acknowledge the fact that the album is, 30 years old next year. Like I say, we recorded two songs.
Well, are you working on any side projects apart from music, like maybe writing or acting or stuff?
I've got a few things on the go. Yeah, there's a cartoon called Filthy Antics that is with some people who are like looking over it and seeing we've really, it's like we've done a pilot for it. I've still got a little bit of involvement with my friend Rob Caggiano, who's in Volbeat, and me, him, John Tempesta, used to be in White Zombies, in the Cult now, and King from Godseed. We had a band called Temple of the Black Moon, and we're kind of resuscitating our interest in that as well, but I don't know how far that'll go, whether it'll get to the point of recording an album. My other band, Devilment, is on permanent hiatus at the moment, because since Cradle of Filth got new management about 6 years ago, which is Des and Anastasia Fafara from, well, Des obviously from Cold Chamber and Devil Driver, yeah, and his wife, their management company, Oracle Management, took over the band. And since then, we've been, they're amazing. And because of that, we've been very busy. So I haven't had the time to be looking at other side projects or anything. I've been concentrating solely on Cradle of the Filth because we're just so busy. And if I'm not busy, I want to spend time with friends and family, girlfriend, et cetera, et cetera. That doesn't say that, that's not to say that I won't go back and do Devilment at some point, but at the moment, it's a bit tiring because I love music, but there's only, you know, if it's not like a big record and it's not going to, you know, it's going to interfere with Cradle of Filth too much. Cradle of Filth is obviously the baby. It's the, it's, my job.
Yeah.
And, it's very involving. You know, you have to wear many hats when in Cradle of Filth.
What do you miss the most and what you don't miss about the metal scene of the early 90s?
Well, I miss the magic of it. It was very fresh and new, and that's because obviously it was a burgeoning scene. We were young to it. There were a lot of great bands around. The internet wasn't a thing, so and there weren't a huge amount of people who actually owned mobile phones. So everything was a lot more concise, mysterious, probably more difficult to organize. It wasn't as, I don't know, it was a bit more dangerous. I found it more dangerous. We played dangerous places. We did dangerous shows. We acted in bad ways sometimes. You know, we were a black metal band, and, you know, although we didn't go as far as Norwegian bands with Deaths and Destruction, we pretty much held our own in other respects. You know, the band drank a lot, partied a lot, but they were good times. You know, we wrote some great albums, and we toured heavily, but things have changed since then. I don't miss the chaos at all. We've done that as part of our history. We still turn up at some venues and people are like, oh my god, no, they're here. I think they find that Cradle of Filth very well behaved and very professional. We've got a great crew and we have fun, you know, not at other people's expenses. We just have a lot of fun nowadays. I don't know, that sounds ridiculous, but you know, everybody enjoys what they, if they love what they do, they enjoy it. And that's what we do. And we just try and make it as comfortable and as exhilarating as possible. So what I don't miss about the old days is the shitty gigs, you know, the things you had to do to move up the ladder, and maybe weren't quite as astute business-wise. So we took on some things that we definitely wouldn't do nowadays. There were some scenarios that we got put into because at one point or another, we didn't have management, or the management, you know, it was very sort of early in our career. So, all that stuff is kind of handled for us now. It's the sort of thing that happens with any career. The further you get along with it, you get more more knowledge, more wisdom about what you're doing. And, you know, because you've had a lengthy history to take notes from.
Yeah, so do you have like one final message and greeting to your Italian fans? Do you have any Italy-related memories in your life?
Oh, yeah, loads. I love touring Italy. Unfortunately, there's just not enough shows in Italy. It's always, you know, one or two shows is always Milan's always one of the shows, and I love, don't get me wrong, it's a breath of fresh air coming to Italy if you're in Europe as well, because you're coming down into warmer climes. There's a certain feel that Italy and Spain and south of France and Greece have that's so much different from Northern Europe or Central Europe. And it breaks up the feel of the tour. You know, it's always a good feeling when you're coming out of like the south of France or Switzerland, and it's like, oh, tomorrow, you know, we're in Italy, and you're like, yeah, cool. You know down where you're going to get a really nice cup of coffee for a start. But yeah, though, we've had some great times. We used to have big good friends with a guy called Ice, who ran the Transylvania bars, and I used to spend a lot of good time with him. He flew me over, well, me, one of the girls from the movie, and the director Alex Shandon for the movie Cradle of Fear. He flew us over, and we did like a tour of his clubs, sort of promotion part of the movie, and just generally interacting with the fans and stuff. And that was a lot of good fun. It was crazy, in fact. I remember one night he like literally smashed up one of his own bars, not in a mood. He was just having a play fight with the people that worked there, and it just got a bit out of hand. But yeah, that was amazing, good fun, and great memories of touring there. I had a good memory from earlier in the year of non related to playing shows, but I took my girlfriend to Rome for a few days, and that we had a great time there. So yeah, lots of fond memories of playing Italy. I remember doing a TV program that was essentially for children, I think, or young. And I can't remember where it was, actually.
I have to check out.
Yeah, we did it. I just remember myself and Paul Allender, our previous guitarist, sitting on this big couch, and we were like all made up. And both of us had a bit of a hangover as well, because we had a great show the night before. And I just remember being completely baffled why these two presenters were all very smiley and sort of, hello, and, you know, it was very surreal. I don't know what we were doing on the program. I'm sure we scared a lot of people.
Do you know any Italian bands?
Yes, of course. The Lacuna Call. I met with Christina last week at the Sixth New World Festival in Las Vegas. There was a band called Ghost Rider who then became Necrodeath.
Yeah.
Theatre the Vampires for one. Early in the morning for me. I work late, and so my brain's a little scrambled. Whenever I get put on a spot when people say, "What's your favourite film? Do you know this? Do you know that?" And I'm like, I'm just trying to think. Claudio Simonetti, obviously of Goblin fame. I did a track with him for the Dario Argento movie, The Mother of Tears, a few years ago, which was great. Always liked Goblin. There's a great dark electro synth dark wave band called Limbo that I'm a massive fan of as well. Yeah, some great stuff come out of Italy in the past. Great movies as well. Lucio Fulcio, Dario Argento, etc., etc. Mario Bavo, isn't it?
Yeah, Mario Bavo, yeah.
Yeah, Pasolini, obviously.
Yeah, of course.
although we watched, I didn't put it on, but we were in America and it was the last day, and we were just like confined to the bus, and our guitar tech kind of demanded that everybody should come and watch 120 Days of Sodom. And I know that we had a video based on that, which was Babylon AD in the day. But nothing can quite prepare you for the for that movie.
It's quite the extreme.
It is pretty, it's still extreme, and it's very, very it's depressing.
Yeah, definitely depressing.
It's not a film that you would literally put on and enjoy. I enjoyed watching people's reactions to it, especially the circle of shit.
Yeah.
Everybody was like gagging and like throwing up coffee and like, oh my God, what the fuck? which I found hilarious. But no, I'm not a massive fan of the film. It's one of those films you kind of enjoy in the moment for being like very, you know, out there. And I appreciate the sentiments of it. I know what he was intending to do with it, his social commentary, etc., and the fact that he'd obviously based the whole thing on the Marquis de Sade and this idea of a network of libertines governing the world and sort of just being subservient to their own and everybody being subservient to their own pleasures. But yeah, it's a very hard watch. Yeah. And obviously there was also the time back in the day, I think it was 1998, not 1898, but it could have been, where we were literally held by gunpoint at the Vatican.
Yeah.
Thanks to Kerrang! Magazine. So yeah, that's another endearing memory of Italy. Yeah.